Welcome to the Standing Up to POTS podcast, otherwise known as the POTScast. This podcast is dedicated to educating and empowering the community about postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, commonly referred to as POTS. This invisible illness impacts millions, and we are committed to explaining the basics, raising awareness, exploring the research, and empowering patients to not only survive, but thrive. This is the Standing Up to POTS podcast.
Hello, fellow POTS patients and beautiful people who care about POTS patients. I'm Jill Brook, your horizontal host, and today we have an episode of the POTS Diaries with a POTS mom. Today we're speaking with Molly. Thank you so much for joining us today, Molly.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here, and it's nice to actually be a part of this because I've listened to quite a few. So this is fun to be on the other side.
Oh, good. Well, without giving out spoiler alerts, we are excited to talk to you because you have more than one set of POTS in your household. And so we're going to kind of talk about that today from a mother's perspective. But before we get into all that, can you just kind of like set the scene for us? Like in this story, introduce us to the protagonists, you know, like who should the listeners know to set the scene?
Yeah, we're just kind of your typical family. We live in Virginia, and I have three children, a 13-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 9-year-old. We're almost 9-year-old. She's 8. And both of my girls have dysautonomia. POTS has become a part of our family at this time. And it's been quite interesting to have two children with that at this time and one without.
Yeah. Okay. Can you tell us a little bit more about you outside the context of POTS? Like, what should people know about you? What do you like to do? Or what's your personality or anything at all that lets us know you a little bit?
Yes. Well, taking care of my family is obviously a big priority, especially now. But I'm a horse person. I love my horse and horseback riding. I would probably spend way too much time with him if I could, but I do have other things I have to do. I love my animals. We have dog and cats. I was a special education teacher and a reading teacher, and I worked part-time at the school that all my kids went to, but now I'm home with them and just enjoy spending time outside and trying to figure out still what I want to do when I grow up. But right now I'm kind of in this holding pattern, but just trying to, you know, take one day at a time.
Yeah. So has POTS always been in the picture, or was there a time that your family was pre-POTS? And if so, when was that? And what did your life look like at that time?
Yes, there was definitely a time that we were pre-POTS. And thinking about this question, it's interesting because I don't want to say that we took things for granted, because I don't think that's fair. But we did kind of live the normal life of, you know, three young kids. They're all pretty close together. So we were crazy raising them. And, you know, my job was great at the time, and my husband's was doing well. And, you know, wellness and health has always been important to us, but it was never like as important as it is now, I think. But yeah, we have social life. We have friends, you know, our kids were typical after school things that they would do, piano and, you know, running club. And I think we were just kind of an average house. Our kids love school. They have great grades and enjoy being at school. And they always love their teachers and their friends. We traveled quite a bit, especially even as COVID kind of thinned out. We hit some traveling as much as we could and vacationing, which we were lucky to do. Yes, I feel like we were really lucky to do a lot of things. And that has changed at this point.
So you had this sort of busy life with, it sounds like, everybody doing great and doing lots of things. What was the first sign that something had changed?
Yeah. So my oldest daughter, who's now 13, she always had a more exhaustive type of personality. Like, she would need her rest, her nap time, even when she was 6, 7, 8. So her body ran a little bit differently than other children. And as she started getting older, she would come down with what we thought was like the stomach bug, because she would just be sick for a lot longer like maybe 2 weeks you'd be out. And, you know, other kids we would see, they get the stomach bug for like 24 hours and they would recover. So there's a mother's intuition that I really gotten in tune with. Something did not feel right. I was like, there was this worry. Something was different about her and I could not figure it out. And the pediatricians were just kind of like, you know, she just gets sick a lot. You know, your kids just get a lot of germs, and it didn't sit right with me at all. So early on, she was probably predisposed to something that gave her POTS, but then we really got into post-COVID and things just kind of unraveled from there for her.
Is it that your family got COVID? Like the story we sometimes hear is that most of the family members recover and then some don't. Is that what happened in your family?
Great question. No. Never had COVID that we know of. And I know, you know, you can still get it. So for her, everything started unraveling kind of post, and I'm going to say maybe this is controversial for some people, but I really think COVID vaccine kind of unraveled some things for her. And I'm not saying that it does it for everybody, or, you know, everybody's body is very different, but things did drastically unravel for her body at that time. But I didn't know that. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know why she had this. So the first signs were, you know, she was just anxious, and then she would be sick and then exhausted, and she could barely make it through her fifth grade day at school. And the doctors were just, I don't know what's wrong. So I did my own research, and I thought maybe she had chronic fatigue syndrome, and she does. I mean, it's very similar to that. And I made her an appointment at Mayo in 2021, I believe it was. And, you know, the pediatricians just told me just to hang in there and wait. Meanwhile, she was laying in her bed sick for 2 months, like with really no support from anyone because nobody knew what to do. So not playing the blame game. It's just there was a lack of knowledge. And really, there was no information. It was just a really isolating feeling as a parent that you just can't help your child.
Yeah, yeah. And people won't be able to see you, but I can just tell looking at you that you feel a lot of pain just even saying that she spent 2 months in bed with no support, as doctors were just saying, hang on and wait.
Yeah. Yep. And we put all of our faith in that one visit, you know, and I left my other two kids and flew her, which was flying is very hard on her, as most POTS people know that it's very difficult. And we flew to Minnesota and they did give her the tilt table test. And that was really hard for her, for a 10-year-old to do that. But she was so brave. And she did get a POTS diagnosis there, which was helpful. But basically, you know, they just said salt, water, exercise was a cure for her. And it really was not for her type of dysautonomia. It was not helpful for her. She, you know, has post-exertional malaise. And we were just kind of back to a year of being in bed again with really pulling for answers and calling different places. And I think I spent that whole year just trying to find someone to help her. So it was just a really difficult time. And I know that there's other parents going through it, and I hate that for them. So, you know, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to do a podcast and to share, you know, what we've been through.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I remember that feeling of thinking you get into some great institution with the best medical care on earth, and you think, okay, this is going to be my day to find out what we can do, and we're going to make progress. And wow, does it hurt to find out that that's not always possible.
It does. Yeah. Yes. It was a definite, it was just a really bad feeling. Yeah. That you just, you know, went all that way and spent all that money, and you just kind of really didn't get too far. So that was rough. Yeah. And it took a lot of, you know, it caused a lot of medical trauma for my daughter as well, which, you know, it's going to take a lot of time for her to heal from that, I think. Ooh.
And wow. And this was all while your other daughter was still not having POTS symptoms?
Correct. So she was 5 or 6 at the time. Yes, she was still not showing symptoms. She and my son were still, a normal average kid. Yes. So I had no worries of them at the time because I was focusing on the older one. Yeah.
Okay. So then what happened to her to get POTS?
So just last year in 2023, well, let me back up. There was always a fear as a parent that your other child's going to come down with the same thing. So I would pick up on little things and I would get upset and tell my husband, I think something's going to go wrong. Like, I think she might have the same problems. And he was just like, no, you do the best you can. You can't focus on the bad, but I knew. So in 2023, she started school and got strep and a COVID exposure. She never had COVID that we know of, but she just never recovered from that time. So she has a different kind of dysautonomia or POTS than my older one. So it's a different version. She's a little bit easier to handle. She's more of the salt, electrolytes, movement kind of POTSy. And my oldest is more of a fatigue, malaise all the time kind of POTSy. So they both look at each other and are like, how come you have this and I can do this, but you can't do that? So that's been interesting to try to help them emotionally through that. You know, they each can do and things differently at different times. And then there's fear, you know, of seeing how the other one handles it and what they're going through.
Wow. So how has this affected your family now?
Yeah, it really has put us through a lot. And not to minimize what other people are going through, because gosh, I know that other people are fighting their own battles for sure. So I try not to make it a pity party, but you know what? Sometimes you just want to have a little one. But it still is a really hard time. I think we have learned to cherish the good moments because there are a lot. And that's probably the most important thing that we've learned. There's a lot of time in our house when things are quiet. And, you know, for parents of three kids, when you're raising them, the house is not quiet. And so we've been used to a lot of noise. And lately, you know, the girls, if they're down, they're in their room and they don't want noise, right? You know, Patsy, you don't want noise. You've got a headache. So trying to navigate my son, who does not have dysautonomia, and he's in the middle of the two girls. And he needs like the noise and he needs the friendships from them is difficult. So my husband and I always need to be with him to help him through when the girls are down. So it's really hard for him to be around sick people, you know, because it happens a lot. So as a family, we stay at home a lot, and that's okay. We have to make home comfortable for everybody and take turns when we go out. We have a great sitter who comes and helps out. We found that that's really helpful, that somebody that understands POTS and can be an extra set of hands for us so we can, as adults, get out of the house. So you have to work through the solitude, I think. It gets lonely in the house sometimes. And I think that's the biggest part of it, is just how sick everybody can be at one time. And it's not all the time. But those moments are really difficult.
Yeah, I feel like just within my own body, my feeling is, geez, it's always something. And so I can't imagine having two daughters with POTS, because it really must feel like it's always something. Does it feel like, I don't know, it must be very hard to plan things. It must be.
Yes. Yes. I think if I had to describe it and what we can do now in one word, it would be pivot. Because we always have to change our plans. Like, okay, this is what we're going to do, but we know we can pivot. We can be flexible. We might just have to cancel and stay home. And that's what we have to do a lot of times. You know, when family comes over, we need to go see grandparents. We can plan to do that. But a lot of times my oldest is too sick to get in the car. So one of us will stay with her. Or, you know, even our beach vacation, she wasn't able to go. So my husband and I had to take turns going with the other kids. And that's kind of tears your heart apart to miss out on that, or to have her miss out on that. But then you have to be like, I have my 13-year-old with me, which is great. You know, some people don't. She's still here. So focusing on those positive things, it's not always easy, but it's what is the healthiest for us to do, I think.
For how long have you had both kids in this situation? And I, the reason I'm asking is because I'm wondering, like, have you had a full year of all the normal activities, like, you know, winter holidays come up and summer vacation and birthday parties? And like, do you mind talking about how a few of those things have gone and what you've learned about making the most of them if possible?
Yeah, I mean, with the two girls with their POTS. So my oldest, who is the most affected, is so independent and so great about letting us go do some things sometimes. And she likes her alone time also. I mean, she's 13 now. She's like, okay, if y'all want to go somewhere, it's fine. You know, she's like, I will do my own thing in the house. So there are times when we might take the other two, my younger and my son, out to dinner or something like that. Because my youngest is able to do things like that sometimes. She's still pretty good, you know, functioning pretty well. So we'll do that and maybe do a little dinner or take them to the pool or something. So we'll kind of divide up, and thank goodness she's old enough to be left alone and happy with that for like an hour or two. But your heart is still sad, you know, that you're not all together. Or one of us will take my son out and the other one will stay at home with the girls. But so for birthday parties, like with my daughter, she's fatigued really easily. So and last minute, I've had to been like, sorry, we can't make it. And for kids to understand that they can't come to your birthday, I think is really difficult. And I think it's hard to tell a child or describe to their friends, hey, my daughter might be able to come, but she might not. It depends on how she feels. I mean, these kids are 8. So a lot of the parents are really helpful with that. Some of them get it and help us through that. But we do not have a normal schedule. Like, we know that we can't plan anything for the weekend, maybe one thing, and we work around that. But vacations are a challenge, and any kind of outing is just, it may or may not happen, and we might have to divide up, that kind of thing. So, yeah, we just have to be flexible and know that we probably won't make things, but every once in a while we do, and, you know, we're happy when that happens.
Yeah. Do you find that there's any tricks or strategies you've learned over time that make it better? I mean, it sounds like just being super flexible is the main thing. And I guess you also mentioned finding help, an extra set of hands.
Yep. Finding an extra set of hands. I think preparing everybody for what the two situations are, like, hey, this might happen or this might happen. We might make it or might not. And then I think that helps the most. And then health-wise, telling my girls ahead of time, especially my oldest, because she has a lot of anxiety about going anywhere, just kind of preparing her, you know, hey, what do you think about going? If you feel up to it, let's do it. And using the right language for them, I think, is really important. As my oldest has told me, I don't like it when you say, I can't wait until you can do this, or I hope you can do this. She says that sets her up for failure. She says she likes it if I say, would you be able to? And that's been really important for her, the way that we talk to her.
Wow, that sounds like really smart. I love the self-awareness, because I get that too, that there's subtle ways that it's a lot of pressure. And that's great that at 13, she can verbalize that.
Yeah, she's just starting to figure out all of these things in her older age. It's been great that she's gotten older and more mature and more self-aware. I think for the first 2 years, she just shut down. It was just like completely shutting everything away because she had to. Yeah.
What about like their social lives? Is that really tough? Like, oh my gosh, to be 13 or preteen, is there any, I don't know, strategies you've hit upon, or how's that happening? Or are you lucky that you have introverts as kids, or what is that like?
Yeah, great question. My oldest, the 13-year-old, has always been a happy kid at home. Like, even when she was little, she just loved being at home. She could entertain herself. So it's almost a blessing that she's the one who has that, the hardest, because she can entertain herself at home when she feels good. The friends part is hard because for 2 years, she was so sick. She kind of lost all of her friends from fifth grade because they all transitioned into sixth grade. Here we go to middle school. One or two would check on her and come by every once in a while and see her. And for me as a mom, that was really hard because there was a group, we were like a community, like we all stuck together. And then all of a sudden the community was just like, I was like, where's all of her friends? Nobody's checking on her. Like, and in fairness to the other people, you move on and you do other things. But in my mama heart, it hurt that those friends weren't checking on her or me. So that was hard. But in her teenage years now, she has a little more of a social life. She has one good friend who comes and sees her maybe once a week when she feels good. And she has some online friends. Thank goodness for technology. And also, not thank goodness, but it does help get her through a lot because she can communicate with other kids her age. So that really does help her. I think if we didn't have the technology, it would be a lot harder for her.
Have you found anything? I know you mentioned that for your younger daughter, the salt and the water has been helpful. Have you found any other things that have made a difference for either child?
For our oldest, I feel like it's such a mystery. So she has made a lot of progress since last year. She's definitely able to do more, and cognitively, like, she's just more there. She had a lot of brain fog last year, which made school really difficult. But for her, we haven't found like the great medicine that really helps. We've tried a lot of things to the point where we were driving ourselves crazy. And I think, she has mast cells. So like anything that we kind of throw at her can, you don't know what it's going to do, right? I think her maturity has been one of the greatest things that has helped her because she's able to take care of herself a little bit more and listen to her own needs. Also, the anxiety piece she's able to get a hold on now from all the medical trauma. I think she's getting more of a grasp on that, and that has helped, learning to like journal a little bit, take some walks, things like that. So it's a very slow process for her. For my youngest, she's more a pacer. She just needs to pace herself right now, which is hard to tell an 8-year-old not to, go to a party or with your friends, or not to go swimming, or not to go out and run too hard. So that's difficult, is to tell an 8-year-old not to do too much because she's either running or she's laying. But she's a little bit easier. So it's just over time, she'll learn to advocate for herself, I think.
So for parents who are in a similar situation, but maybe earlier on the journey, can you talk a little bit more about what you just said about, you mentioned having tried a lot of different things for your older daughter and maybe driving yourselves crazy with it? Because I think that's some people where their ears are perking up and they're saying, wait, what? What is this now?
Yes, about trying different things. So I think my advice on that would be is to just do one thing at a time and know that this is going to take time. And I think that's the hardest thing for a parent to hear, especially for a kid who's not feeling well. And you want it to speed up, like you want to give them the magic pill, right? So I think just to take your time, do your own research, but don't go down the rabbit hole. Like, you got to stop yourself from Googling too much and be kind to yourself on that one. Because, my husband's caught me up at night, like on the computer, being like, what, how can I help her? What do I do? Just a really helpless feeling. So I think taking a breath and just, one thing at a time. Know that eventually something's going to work. Something's going to help. Doesn't mean that you're going to find the cure, but there are ways to help and you'll get there. Just don't panic. I think I go through lots of moments of panicking, and it just, it only makes everybody else panic. So
that sounds like a lot of pressure on you. Wow. Have you found good local or non-local doctors who are really with you every step of the way helping with this? Or are you feeling more on your own? Are there pediatricians supportive? Do they know what POTS is? And do they know what mast cell activation syndrome is? How much support have you had that way?
Yeah. Stop me if I go too far with this. There's a lot of information from all the time that we've spent doing this. Pediatricians, no, I have not found one yet that I feel is supportive, that I haven't had to, or that I haven't walked out feeling like, oh, you know, I feel like they got it. So no, I haven't found that yet, especially, you know, locally. I have a decent team, like her cardiologist is pretty supportive. I couldn't be where we are today without him. He's the first one who said, she just needs to rest. And that was just like the best thing I'd ever heard, because nobody would acknowledge that she needed to rest.
Wow, just that simple thing.
Yeah. Yes.
It's so hard.
Yeah. Nobody wants to tell a kid to rest. It's just weird. And everybody wants to tell them to get up and move and, you know, to go be happy. And nobody really got how sick she was except for him. He was the first one. So I turned to him for all of the school note, anything I need to back me up, he will pretty much help me with that. And he was the first one who diagnosed my youngest, because that still took like 9 months of me fighting other doctors, even though I was like, hello, like her sister has this. You're like, I know what I'm doing, kind of. Like, can you believe me? So he was the first, as soon as I talked to him about her, he was like, yeah, let's see her. She's definitely probably got it. And, you know, it's not like that was good to hear, but it was a relief because I knew that's what it was. Also, we have a great functional medicine doctor, which is, you know, after we kind of exhausted everything that we could, we did find one that treated children, which that was really hard because I couldn't find one that treated kids for a really long time. And he's not even in our state, but he sees us virtually. So he was the first one who really found something in her blood work that made sense of why this happened to her. And we had never had that before. Nobody ever tried to figure out why. And as a parent, you want to know why your kid isn't feeling well, not just Band-Aid it. Yeah, but nobody really understands mast cell. I've kind of had to talk to doctors about that and just say, well, just try this, please. And they're finally just like, okay, we'll try it. Yeah, so it's a lot of advocating, which I'm not great at, but I've gotten a lot better.
Wow. Are there things you wish you had known sooner?
Yes. That's a great question. I think I wish I knew that doctors, and I don't mean this in any way because we need doctors, and I'm not putting a negative spin on it, but it kind of sounds like it. I'm just trying to say it in the best way I can, but the doctors don't always know what is best for your child in a certain situation. Trust your intuition, I think, is the best advice I could give. I just didn't. I always thought, listen to the experts, right? Like, they know everything. So for me, I just wish I wouldn't have spent so much time listening to them before I made my own decisions. Yeah. Just to spare my child some of the trauma that she had to go through.
Yeah. Yeah. You had mentioned that earlier, that it's going to take a while, especially for your older daughter, it sounds like, to undo some of the medical trauma. That sounds like its own.
It's a whole separate piece. Yeah. Yeah. It really is. She's gone through a lot of people not believing her. And, you know, when you're 9 at school and you say you don't feel well, if you don't have a fever and you don't look sick, you get sent back to class. And I think this all started, you know, right when she was finishing school, and she can remember, you know, being at field day, that's where we go outside, and it was hot. And she was like, Mom, I just felt like I was going to pass out. And my girls aren't like ones that pass out unless they're really sick. And she was like, my teacher was just like, well, just go sit over there. And, you know, and it's not the teacher's fault. The teacher didn't know, but for a kid to sit through that misery day after day because she just didn't know what was going on with her body, I think she's having to do a lot of work to trust her body again and to trust other people.
Oh, boy. Can we talk a little bit about you? Because I'm guessing that there are parents out there who are listening and are maybe beginning this journey, or they're pretty far into this journey. And I mean, we hear about it sometimes. We get emails. But how do you cope? How do you take care of yourself? How do you, it sounds like you have a strong marriage. How do you take care of all that stuff? Well, I mean, I can just tell by your body language that this is so difficult and so painful. And you have a lot, I think, of maybe stoicism. And I think you're not like making a big deal of it right now. But to me, it looks like this is so painful and so difficult, as it would be. But how are you doing? Is there stuff you can do to cope?
I have to admit, like, to parents, I probably do cry at least once a day. And that's okay. Sometimes you just have to. And the car is a great place to cry for me, because, you know, you can have music, you can play your sad songs, or you can practice a happy song. So you just do what you need to do.
Yeah, I think for me, I have a great counselor. I think that's really important. No shame in that, that's for sure. And I have a small group of friends who will ask about my girls, and that's important. My friends are also goofy, and we all like horses together. So it's very therapeutic that I get time with them. Not a lot of time, you know, obviously, as we'd like, but we do get some time. And then getting outside is really helpful for me. I do have a really good marriage. I feel lucky in that sense. And I know that some parents are single and doing this on their own, and I can't imagine, but I know it can be done. So I think also talking about it, and I will tell parents out there, not everybody wants to listen to it, because sometimes it can feel heavy and it can feel sad, and also nobody really understands. And I have one mom who I talk to occasionally, and she says, "Molly, unless you are in this with your children," she's like, "nobody's going to understand it like we do." And well said, you know, and it's not excluding other people. It's just, it helps to find other parents going through this. It really does, because they get it. And it's really hard to find. So I found some through Facebook and some just by talking about it, or, you know, that kind of thing. But I find it really helpful.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to give a quick shout out to a Facebook group called Possibility Parents.
Yes, I'm a member of that as well.
Okay, that's the best group that I know of. Do you have any other resources that you know of to tell other parents about?
Well, you know, the Standing Up to POTS and anything on Instagram that I can find sometimes has funny memes on it. And Dysautonomia International does a pretty good job of supporting and advocating. I think I went to the conference last year, and I found that really empowering as a parent. You know, my daughters couldn't go, but I probably wouldn't have wanted them there anyways. It was good for me, I think, to do that. So, you know, and just being talking about it and helping other people become more aware that this is real and that this exists is helpful for me. And I'm probably sometimes annoying that I post so many things, but whatever, you know, it is what it is.
Can I just ask, do you have any signs of POTS, or does your husband, or
great question.
You have a feeling that this is like a genetic thing, or anybody else in your family, or you think you just got unlucky, or?
I wish I knew the exact answer. I myself don't. I mean, I have Hashimoto's, like I have some thyroid problems, but I don't. So I do understand fatigue to some extent, which is good, because I probably wouldn't understand it as much. But we have some family members that have like a little bit of tachycardia, or like, you know, if they stand up too fast or have the fainting episodes, but nothing severe like this. And we did go to a geneticist, like we did have myself and my husband and my oldest. But nothing came up, which is good, I think. But I think there's still more research to be done to figure out why we have been hit so hard.
Yeah. What do you wish more people understood about POTS?
Yeah, I wish that they understood that
it's such a broad term and it can be so many different things. It can be, my oldest is just so severe. And when people say POTS, they're like, oh, you know, she needs salt or she passes out, and I have to explain it, which is, I'm happy to. But I just think it's important to know that it's dysautonomia, like it's a dysfunction of your autonomic system, which controls your whole body. You know, it's nausea. It's, for some, not all, headaches, migraines. It can be quite severe. And a lot of people know that, but not enough.
For sure. Anything you wish more doctors understood about POTS?
That it's pediatric too. I have a really hard time finding people that acknowledge this happens to children.
Yeah. And so has anyone given you any idea about what to expect over time? You know, because an 8-year-old with POTS is a very young POTSy.
Yes. So I'm always finding things to try and do and to answer that question. So I've got my youngest into like some long COVID clinic things coming up to do some treatment for that. I saw a special in the news. So I'm just like, I'm into everything that is non-invasive for them that I can try without traumatizing them. And then my oldest, I think it's just, we're at a standstill right now, trying a couple things. And it's such a wait and see, which is so incredibly hard. But, you know, at first the data came out saying that children tend to pop out of this after puberty, but then now the newest research is saying it's kind of a lifelong thing that they learn to deal with. So I just stopped listening to that and just said, oh, I'll just figure it out.
Yeah. You know, I have been also looking to a lot of the long COVID clinics and long COVID protocols.
Yep.
And what I actually really like about them is it seems like some of them have done a great job coming up with treatments to try that are kind of like healthy anyways.
Yep.
So that's sort of my new mantra for myself is I'll try stuff if it is, you know, just kind of a healthy thing to do anyways. And and they're coming up with a lot of those things.
Yes. Yes. Good for you. And I have a basket of vitamins that and I'm writing everything down of what works. So in vitamins, hopefully, aren't hurtful. And there's always new research coming out, and that's what's keeping me going, I think. And probably you as well. Yeah. That you're just always, you're not giving up. Things can get better.
So is there anything that your family can do for enjoyment together, even when your daughters are pretty POTSy?
Yes. I was thinking about this question. And this is just this year, because last year we weren't able to do this. So it means so much more. But at night is a better time for my oldest, because the sun is down and it's kind of a nice temperature here in Virginia. It's not so hot. But we've been going outside at night and just standing out in the middle of our road and in our yard and just kind of under the moon. And we've all just kind of enjoyed that time. It's been so lovely to have all five of us together. Like my youngest might ride her bike and my son might throw the football. He's got a good glow in the day. And my oldest is just out there with us. And it's a lovely time for all of us.
Oh, that's so nice. And is there anything else that you would say to other parents, just as a message, as advice, as an invitation for help? I mean, anything at all you'd want to say?
I know. There's so much, and it's so hard to say it all in one sitting. So the best I can say is I'm happy to talk, to anybody about our situation at any time to help. So I think finding your village, and by village it might be like one person, is helpful. And just know it's all trial and error right now is what it seems like to me. But just savor those little moments each day, and do not compare your life to other people's, which is a good thing for all of us to do. Just enjoy what you have.
Yeah. No, that's beautiful. Would you be up for ending with a little levity in the speed round?
I will try my best.
In your family, what is the favorite way to get salt?
Lay's potato chips or olives.
And what's the drink of choice for hydrating?
Water with lemon.
K Can I ask how many doctors you guys have seen for POTS?
A lot.
Or dysautonomia?
A lot. I don't know exact count, but a lot.
Have you or your daughters met other patients face-to-face?
I have. My daughters have not.
Can I ask for one word that describes what it's like living with chronic illness in the house?
Interesting.
It's a nice positive spin. What's some good advice anyone ever gave you?
You can't change the way that others are feeling about what is going on in your life. You just have to carry on, and you can't make somebody else feel what you're feeling.
What is something small or inexpensive that brings either you comfort or joy or your daughter's comfort or joy?
Laughter. Hearing them all laugh together.
Who is somebody that you admire?
Oh, my oldest daughter.
What is something you're proud of?
Not being silent. Trying to find answers.
What do you think is the toughest thing about POTS?
When they're missing out on activities, I think. When your children are missing out on things.
Is there any parting words you'd like to leave us with? We really appreciate everything that you've shared. And I know everybody listening is pulling for you guys.
Yeah, we have enjoyed this. And I think, you know, I know my daughter would love to talk too. I think it's, you know, just don't stop trying, but also be kind to yourself. Is a big one, especially as a parent.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is great advice. And I know that we're going to get a lot of emails thanking you for sharing your experience. And so we hope it only gets easier for all of you guys going forward. But
yes,
thank you for sharing
everyone.
This today.
Yes, it's been so much fun. I've been happy to do it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And hey, listeners, we hope you enjoyed today's conversation. We'll be back again next week. But till then, thank you for listening. Remember, you're not alone. And please join us again soon.
As a reminder, anything you hear on this podcast is not medical advice. Consult your healthcare team about what's right for you. This show is a production of Standing Up to POTS, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. You can send us feedback or make a tax-deductible donation at www.standinguptopots.org. You can also engage with us on social media at the handle Standing Up to POTS. If you like what you heard today, please consider subscribing to our podcast and sharing it with your friends and family. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts or at www.thepotscast.com. Thanks for listening.